We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show episode. I don't know the number because we've been doing so many damn things on this feed over the last week. I just realized as I was saying that, I don't know what number we're on because the last couple days we released the intro episode and episode number one of George's Box, which is the new podcast with JJ from the Bronx and Keith McPherson. Hope you guys have listened to it. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. I've listened to both episodes and I think it's a great start. I'm so excited for their podcast this season and where they're going to take it. When we were in Tampa, a few people asked, you know, why are you guys releasing another Yankees podcast? What's going to be different about George's Box and the current Bronx Pinstripe show that Scott and I have been doing for 4 years? We're at over 300 episodes. And I think the guys said this on one of their intro episodes that, you know, Scott and I are diehard fans, but we are also into the more in-depth baseball analysis, the sabermetrics, the, you know, we'll talk about spin rate. We'll talk about zips projections. We're going to break down an Aaron Boone bullpen decision forever. And that's not going to change. And that's just who we are as fans. That's who I'm always going to be as a fan. I'm always going to harp on those sorts of things. And I always want to learn more about baseball. And, you know, I've learned a lot from this podcast, from doing this podcast about advanced metrics. When we started it 4 years ago, I mean, I knew of sabermetrics, but I mean, sabermetrics to me at that time was war. And now over doing the over 300 shows, I would like to think I know a little bit more about all those stats, and the podcast, educating ourselves has been able to do that. And we're still not afraid to give our fan takes and our fan take hot reactions and yell about something and complain about Sonny Gray pissing us off or gush over Aaron Judge, you know, being the leader of the team and the face of the franchise. We're still going to do all that stuff. The guys at George's Box are going to give you just a different take on things. They're going to, you know, as they said, both of them are come from different backgrounds. I think both are very funny, personable, and good on a mic. So it's all good. It's going to be different. It's going to complement each other very nicely. It's going to be like two sides of a coin. It's going to work nicely all season. Their next episode, which will be released the Wednesday before opening day, is going to be on their own new feed. So make sure you guys subscribe to that. It is not up yet. We're going to let you know when it is up so you guys can subscribe and do all the rating and reviews and all that kind of stuff that you guys have been doing for us, which, as you know, helps us out very much. So today's episode, we're going to be previewing the Tampa Rays 2019 season. I spoke with Neil Salons. He does pre and post game for Rays baseball. He's actually been on the podcast each of the last two seasons. So this is his third year. He's going to be on our podcast previewing the Rays. A lot of interesting stuff that I talked to him about. I'm not going to spoil any of it. We did about 20 to 25 minutes, so hope you enjoy it. And we're going to be releasing a team preview leading up to opening day. I believe tomorrow, Friday, will be the Red Sox preview. And then next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, we're going to be releasing the Blue Jays and the Orioles preview. So stay tuned for those. And we're also going to be doing our regular episodes next week, Monday and Thursday. Since it is opening week, we're moving back to twice a week. So very exciting. A lot of stuff going on with Bronx Pinstripes. Enjoy the Rays preview episode.
I'm as free as Andy Dufresne was standing in the rain after escaping Shawshank coming out the drain.
And these days you ain't holding me back. I'm flowing these raps. The pain, it ain't a thing when the music in my brain I maintain.
Joining me on the podcast now is Neil Salons. He is the pre and post game radio host for the Rays baseball. And Neil, this is the third year in a row you've been on the podcast to preview the Rays. So welcome back.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
When you were on last year, it was like this exact week, and it was the last, you know, last couple days of spring training. You were very high on the Rays, and I did not buy in. I did not believe you. And I don't think a lot of people thought the Rays were going to have a good season. And, you know, maybe you were just being positive. You're very close to the team, and that's totally understandable. That's what I thought it was. But they scratched and clawed their way to 90 wins and had a very, very I think, respectable season.
Well, you know, when you win 90 games, I mean, more often than not, you're going to end up in the playoffs. I mean, since they've gone to two wild cards, that's been the case for all but a few occasions. So I don't know if I thought they would be that good. I definitely thought they would have, you know, a 500 or better record. I did think that there was that kind of young talent in the system. And it did take time to gel, and I know there were probably even more probably naysayers when the team started 1-8 and 4-13, and especially with all the injuries they had to their pitching. When you consider all the injuries they did have, and that there were 200-win teams in their own division, I mean, to get to 90 wins is a pretty good accomplishment, especially with 23 kids who were rookies that played at some point.
Definitely, and they gave the Yankees a lot of trouble, especially in Tampa. It was like a house of horrors for the Yankees in Tampa. Kevin Cash, I think, is a very good manager. He doesn't get a ton of credit, I think, you know, from the broader baseball landscape, from the broader baseball fan. Talk about Kevin Cash and what he does for that clubhouse.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think he provides a great atmosphere, and he allows the players to be themselves. And I think he's a terrific communicator, and I think you add all these things up, and that makes a good manager. I think his job is as hard as any, because, you know, for most teams, you know, for the upper echelon teams that win 90-plus games, they might have a set lineup, or they may know seven of their nine starters, and they, you know, exactly how they're going to carry things. Well, the way the Rays have had to do things, you know, to maximize the resources. I mean, Kevin probably does more managing in-game from the third inning on than any manager in baseball. So I think not only is he terrific at creating a good atmosphere in the clubhouse, but I think he's really, really good in terms of being a tactician. And I think, you know, because he's having to do it more than anybody and still doing it well, I think it speaks to, you know, just his feel for the game.
Right. The opener, that was like really the trend of the Rays last year. They made the opener mainstream, and it sounds like they're doing it again. Cash already announced they're going to go with two openers to start the season. And like you said, he has to do so much in-game managing. He has to select the next reliever to come in, and it needs to work out, because the whole argument against bullpenning or using an opener is that there's more opportunities for things to go wrong. So he really needs to pick and choose his matchups carefully.
It can be where you are using it more, but I mean, if you look at the way fourth and fifth starters have been, I mean, so many of those guys are kind of five and fly type guys lately, that what the Rays are basically doing is almost just reversing the order to give the guy who goes five a chance to do it against lesser hitters, at least comparably so. I mean, when you're in a division like the Rays are in, where you've got to face, you know, J.D. Martinez, Betts, and Benintendi, or you have to face Judge, you know, Stanton when he's healthy, D.D. Gregorius, or whomever it may be, because their lineup is just so thick, you'd rather have them face the 7, 8, 9 hitters three times than you would the 1 through 4 hitters three times. So I think especially with what traditionally will be a young pitching staff, it made a lot of sense from a tactical standpoint to give those guys the softest landing possible. I think, you know, I think they've also said all along, if they had a 4 or 5 some like the Houston Astros did last year, you know, where you've got Verlander and Cole and Cummings and Pike, I mean, and Charlie Morton, then you're able to just roll your 5 starters out there. And if the Rays get back to that point with some of the young guys that they have on the mend, like a Brent Honeywell, so be it. But in the meantime, I think they had to make some adjustments. And I think what they found is that a lot of hitters are uncomfortable having to face a guy who throws 98 to 100 the first inning or two. And if you then change that, and then the next guy they face is throwing in the, you know, around 90, 92, and then you go back to someone throwing hard, it's more difficult if they're going to face 4 pitchers in as many at-bats as compared to the olden days where you generally got to face that starter 3-4 times and got a feel for what they could and could do that day and could eliminate pitches, and as they went through the game, and you have more success.
Exactly, and that's the whole, you know, when anyone talks about Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak, they always say, well, if he didn't get the starter in the first 2 or 3 at-bats, he was going to get him in the 4th at-bat. Well, that doesn't exist anymore for players, and it certainly doesn't exist when you are going up against the Rays pitching staff.
Yeah, it definitely makes it harder, and I think what they've also managed to do is find a lot of guys who have different looks, but also have the ability to pitch multiple innings out of out of the bullpen, and guys who are flexible, and guys who are willing to do what it takes to win. You know, I think that what probably was lost early on from a national perspective is, you know, the Rays could have just said, okay, we'll just bring guys up from AAA, we'll, you know, have them through the first five innings, and if they struggle, they'll learn from it, that's okay. I think that the basic strategy to try and win, you know, I kind of compare it to football. Every team doesn't run a two-back high set with, you know, two wide receivers and one tight end. Some teams run three wide outs, some teams run no back, some teams run, you know, kind of a hybrids. You know, you go to college football and Army still runs, you know, like a wishbone or Navy does. So I think all of that said, I think basically what the Rays did was they looked at their talent and said, what gives us the best chance to compete in this division as hard as it is? And they mapped out a way, and they'll adapt along the way, but I think that's basically what they're trying to do.
Was there any sort of backlash from the pitching staff itself? How did the pitchers...
Oh, no.
They got fully behind it. And I saw something going around Twitter. I think Mark Tompkin tweeted it out. The pitchers were wearing a shirt, "Openers are humans too." I actually thought that was a hilarious shirt. So it sounds like the pitching staff is getting behind this whole trend and really, you know, coming together as a unit.
I think it really started last year when Sergio Romo was the guy to debut it. And when a 35-year-old veteran who's closed out World Series games is willing to begin a game and is willing to be different, I think when you have a lot of young pitchers who, I mean, let's be frank, because of the injuries to Nathan Eovaldi early in the year, and then Brent Honeywell, and then Jose De Leon, and then you had Chris Archer go down, and Jake Faria go down. I mean, if it were not for the injuries, a lot of these guys probably would have been in AAA, and I think the thought process was, well, do I want to be in the big leagues, or do I want to be in AAA doing it my way?
Of course.
And I think and I think the other thing that's important to this is that most of these guys who were in Durham, I mean, the Rays have had it's AAA and AA teams have been in the playoffs, I think, multiple years in a row. And last year, every one of its minor league teams was 10 games above 500 or more. And so I think there's a feeling or expectation of winning. And there's, a philosophy among the players, hey, we do what we have to do to win. And I think that, you know, that there was certainly that buy-in last year. And then I think nationally, Ron Zaidi took over as the Giants GM. He'd been with the Dodgers. There was a lot of questions over the opener. They were poo-pooed by Madison Bumgarner and Jeff Samardzija and some others. And I think, the Rays basically have said, hey, this works for us. If you guys want to do it your way, that's fine. But, you know, we won 90 games doing it, and we continue to believe in it, and we think that it really helped us win.
And I also think having Blake Snell be the anchor of that rotation. He won the Cy Young last year. It was a breakout season for him. He was the best starting pitcher in the American League. So having that guy lead the rotation probably also went a long way.
It allows you to use your bullpen the way you want to instead of the way you have to. And I think that's why they also went out and got a Charlie Morton, a veteran who's been there and done that. And I think that that will also take some pressure off of Tyler Glass now. I think it's possible over the course of the year that Yonny Chirinos could evolve into, you know, a starter from a, what you would call a bulk guy or a follower that comes after an opener. And who knows about Brent Honeywell, how many innings he'll be able to eat. So there are certainly guys that start in the organization. There are guys who are going to come after openers. But I think it definitely begins with a guy who's going to give you a consistent chance to win, allows you to manage the game differently on Sundays. And I think having him and Honeywell and hopefully Tyler Glass coming around, because they've made some good adjustments with them, I think allow them to, you know, be more aggressive on the 2 days where they do have openers.
I saw a headline that Blake Snell was disappointed in the salary raise that he got. I think it was, you know, something like $15,000. Is there any fallout from that?
I don't think so. I mean, I think what I've known, and I've known Blake since he was an A-ball, is that he's a very motivated individual. And if that is used to lead him to greater success, I'm sure that there's probably a feeling, hey, you won the Cy Young. You know, I'm sure naturally people are going, well, what can you do for an encore? Are you going to be able to duplicate it? Was there some luck involved? You know, was it just your, you know, is that what we'll see? Is that the best you can do? And I think that that motivates him. That drives him. I think he's a very, very driven individual, and you don't have a year like he did last year without being extremely driven. So whether he equals last year, surpasses it, or slightly below it, I think he's still going to be driven and he's still going to have a very good year. And I think he's kind of poised to be able to do that once again.
What was the Morton contract? It was 2 years, 15 a year. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, with a third year, I guess, vesting option, depending on how often he pitches over the first two seasons. So for the Rays, that's a substantial investment.
I was just going to say, you don't usually see the Rays that kind of active in the free agent market. So what drove them, what prompted that to, because that was done fairly soon, quick in the offseason. And then you see other guys like Dallas Keuchel, Morton's former teammate, still a free agent.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple things. I mean, first of all, I think Charlie really felt comfortable with this organization. He's married. He's very close to his family. He's got four kids. His home is in Bradenton, which is about less than an hour south of the ballpark. He is at home for the regular season. He's at home for spring training. I think it allows him a lot of benefits. I think if you talk to a man and you may have read, I mean, Charlie's beloved wherever he's been, whether it was Houston, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Phillies, all those organizations spoke so highly of his character, and just getting to know him over the last month and a half, I mean, I can see why. He's very, very well respected. And then beyond that, I think that obviously he's coming off the best 2 years of his career, and it's almost like he's a fine wine. He's getting better with age. And I think the fact that he can impact a young staff, knows how to win, has been part of a winner, and this team has won and was looking for someone to kind of take them to a next level with the stuff that he has. I mean, mid to upper 90s fastball, tremendous breaking ball. He can have a really positive impact on a young group and kind of stabilize them too.
Do you know how Kevin Cash is going to line up the rotation? Is he going to go Snell one day, Morton the next day, or is he going to use the openers in the middle of those guys because he can sort of bank on them giving him length on the other days to sort of bracket it?
I think it's going to change over the course of the year. To begin the season, the Rays are going to go with Snell, Morton, Glasnow, opener. And part of the reason for that is because they play seven straight at home against Houston and Colorado. I think this ensures that Snell and Morton pitch four of the seven games against two teams that I think are playoff clubs. Or if not, they're going to be darn close too. Right? I mean, I think Houston's going to win the West. Colorado has, they made the postseason last year. I wouldn't be shocked if they made it again, especially after, signing Arenado to the lengthy deal they did. And then the first road series is in San Francisco against the Giants. So the way that works from a strategy standpoint, they want an opener in two of those three games. And by doing so, you can have an opener begin the game. He can pitch the first two innings. If the pitcher spot doesn't come up until the top of the third, then you can pinch hit for the pitcher, and it gives you a chance to use a regular hitter in that spot. Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe a leverage situation where you can take an early lead, and now then you hand it off to your bulk guy, and you're able to manage the game a lot differently. I think when the Rays first tried, they wouldn't have called it an opener back then, but there was a National League game where there was a chance of rain. I remember, and I think it was 2015, Steve Geltz pitched the first two innings at Washington and then was pinch hit for. And I think this goes kind of in that same vein that, if you're in a National League ballpark, you might as well take advantage of the rules so that you can have hitters hit in all nine spots.
See, this is the kind of stuff that I love, and I'm being serious. Like, this strategy aspect of it, I think, is something that the Rays have done so well. They just figure it out. However that is, they figure it out. And do you find, like, the Rays are, they get a bad rap. They don't have a huge fan base. I mean, Tommy Pham even had some comments this offseason. Like, it's tough going from such a diehard baseball city in St. Louis to a team that doesn't have the same sort of fan base in Tampa. But do you notice a contingent of fans sort of getting behind this, hey, we're the scrappy bunch that's just going to figure it out any way we can?
I think and Tommy actually, during that interview, I fell for him because I thought some of it was taken out of context.
As most headlines are.
he said a lot of positive things. If you look at like our TV ratings or radio ratings for the organization, they've been very, very high and very, very consistent all the way through. it hasn't translated at the ballpark. I think in part because, you know, it isn't necessarily as centrally located as other ballparks within Major League Baseball. And I think that is a factor. I think also that, you know, you don't have a generational fan base. I mean, in St. Louis, they've had baseball for, what, 100 years.
Right.
In New York, they've had baseball for 100 plus years. And I think that trickle down is different, especially when you've got other franchises within your marketplace during spring training. And I think it takes time for, you know, a dad and mom who move to the area, their kid becomes a Rays fan, maybe at 10 or 12 years of age, but they haven't had kids yet. So there hasn't been that trickle down. So, and especially because ownership kind of changed kind of midstream in this now 21 plus year history of the organization. So I think all of that takes time. You know, I do feel there is a strong enough fan base, especially from, you know, hosting pre and post game shows on radio the last, you know, 7 plus years. I definitely think the fan base is there, and they're definitely engaged and interested in this group. And I think they have a lot of reason to be interested in this group for the next period, especially not only because of what they come off last year, but, you know, the most have put them as a top three farm system where they really have a lot of talent all the way up and down. And I think that depth of talent is going to allow them to kind of maintain this for a bit.
So we talked about the opener, the bullpenning, and all that kind of stuff. Where's the offense coming from? Because that was still, they were below league average in offense last year. Tommy Pham did help out a lot. I think I looked it up. He had a 194 OPS plus after the trade, which is phenomenal. So where are they going to look for the offense in this lineup?
If you look at the group, the last 2 months especially, they were well above league average, and I think that's, you know, Tommy was a big part of that. I think what they're going to have this year is it's not going to be what I would call heavily reliant on a couple individuals. I think it's their depth that's going to be a big reason why they're successful. Are they going to be juggernauts like the Red Sox and Yankees? Probably they're going to be 1-2 in the majors and run scored again. Probably not. But I definitely think they will have, you know, pretty close to a league average offense, which with a lot of young players who have a lot of potential. I think Willy Adames has that tremendous growth potential. Brandon Lau has tremendous growth potential. And I think, you know, guys like Joey Wendell and Daniel Robertson are going to be solid contributors. Mike Zunino can be a 20 home run guy. And I think obviously El Garcia the same. And I think, you know, I think Kevin Kiermaier is a guy who is probably due for a bounce back year. And I think Chiman Choi was a surprise contributor last year. But I think now the Rays kind of have good expectations for him, especially against right-handed pitching. And I think what they have are a lot of guys who probably can hit in that 10 to 20 homer category. A lot of guys give them extra base hits, run the bases reasonably well, will put the ball in play a fair amount. And I think that combination will make them a team that is able to score runs at least when they need to.
G-Man Choi, Yankees had him for a hot minute, so Yankees fans know about G-Man Choi. But you look at the depth chart, like I was looking at the depth chart before this call, and every position has like two or three guys that could possibly get regular playing time. So the lineup, too, is going to be Kevin Cash juggling, playing the hot hand, and that kind of stuff.
I think you're going to see a lot of mixing and matching, and I think it's going to allow them to stay fresh for the course of the season. I mean, you may have a lot of guys on that team that end up playing 5 out of 7 days or 4 out of 6 or whatever it may be. And, you know, some guys are going to be more heavily against right-handed pitching, some more heavily against left-handed pitching, and then some it may vary based on how they're going. And you're right. I mean, they have a lot of guys, you know, the only injury in spring training has been Matt Duffy, and whether his hamstring will respond well enough for him to play by the start of the regular season. But there's three other guys who could make the opening day roster, and Yadier Diaz, Daniel Robertson, and Joey Wendell will all play a very solid third base. And you probably have three guys who can play short and four guys who can play second. And three guys who can play first. So I think that they're going to be able to keep guys sharp, fresh, and hopefully that, because most of them are also very good defensively, you know, it'll translate to success over the long haul.
So final couple questions. What to you, in your opinion, is the ideal but also realistic season for the Rays?
I think making the postseason. I think obviously you're in the toughest division in baseball. I still think.
That would mean three teams from the AL East are in the playoffs because,
yeah.
I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I don't see the Yankees and the Red Sox or one of those two teams missing at least a wild card spot.
Correct. And look, Oakland won 96 games last year. I mean, it's not often a wild card team wins 96 games. And I think that, you know, as I look at the Rays, I think that they have improved their club with the additions of Morton, Garcia, and Zunino, and the maturity of some players, where I think they're certainly capable of having a better overall year than Oakland this year. And Minnesota's probably going to be tough, too. I think they're going to be better than people think as well. But I think they're certainly capable of that. And if they win 90 games again or more, and it's not enough because someone went out with 96, so be it. But I think that probably from a media standpoint, that would be a success. But you also can't predict health. If this team goes through tragic injuries and wins 88 games, and still keeps themselves in it, great. If they're healthy all the way through and they have a subpar season, then that would be disappointing. I think a lot depends on health, but I definitely think they're capable of competing all year long for a playoff spot.
Right. You look at 2018 and the American League had the juggernauts in at the top, and then everyone else, more towards the bottom, where the National League had a bunch of teams really fighting for the playoffs towards the end of September. And maybe with some of those teams you just mentioned, the Rays, Oakland, Minnesota, we might get that kind of battle in the American League too.
It's certainly possible. I'm curious how it goes from a balance standpoint. It's definitely not as balanced as the National League, but I definitely would say that probably three of the top four teams in baseball are probably all going to be in the American League this year.
All right, last question. We're having people on from each of the American League East teams, and we're going to ask them this question as the final question. Predict the final standings in the AL East.
I would say that the Yankees are probably the team to beat right now. And I think part of that is because of the early season schedule, and part of that is because of the deepest team. I think, predicting 1-2-3 is very difficult for me being in it, but I think that the Yankees are the deepest team because they can beat you in so many ways. And as even though the Red Sox won 108 games last year, I think the loss of Kimbrel and Kelly, it's going to take a little time for them to adjust to that. And I think also they were probably healthier. I think the Yankees can probably withstand injury better, especially because their first 56 games, I think they play only 13 against teams that had winning records last year. And so for that reason, I think they have a good chance to get off to a good start, which makes, them very challenging if they're able to get themselves healthy.
And what about the fourth and fifth place? Who do you got in that race?
I think Toronto's going to be better than people think. I really do. I think, first of all, I know Trevor Montoya. I'm a friend of Trevor Montoya's. I was very, very, very happy for him. As disappointing as it was to lose a guy like that in his dugout. But I think eventually you're going to see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette join a team that's probably going to play with a lot of energy and play extremely hard. And I think they do still have a fair amount of talent on that group to begin with, So I think the key for them is they need Stroman and Aaron Sanchez to stay on the field. They haven't had good health from them in a bit. If they do get good health, I think they have a chance to be fairly competitive.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. So I guess everyone in the AL East is going to be beating up on Baltimore. There are a few wins when you guys get to play the Orioles. Well, Neil,
they fall a long way for determining who wins, because, if you end up, I think you end up with, let's say, 11 wins instead of 14 or 15 against a team that is rebuilding, those 3-4 games can be a big gap.
It's exactly what happened between the Yankees and Red Sox last year. If you looked at their record against Baltimore, the Yankees had, I think, four or five fewer wins against Baltimore than the Red Sox did. And I know it was an 8-game swing, but still, that makes a huge difference.
No question.
All right, Neil, if you guys want to follow Neil on Twitter, he's at Neil Salons. Again, he does pre and post game for Rays Baseball. Appreciate the time, Neil.
You got it. Thank you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.